update your home and save big money with Mastercraft Doors at Menards. For over 50 years, Mastercraft has been making quality doors inside and out. Choose from the best in-stock selection of interior and exterior doors ready to take home today. Or design your door your way with our free designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft Doors and check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, the latest edition of Life on Planet Porky. And, of course, I have the absolute sheer delight of introducing to you once again, rock chick extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how are you this morning?
She's back. Yeah. Good morning. Yeah. Yes, very good, considering it's so dull out there.
Yeah, coming down my line, because we're in our separate individual private studios, I detect a vapour, like a rather nice aroma. What is that in your studio there, Miss Jones?
Oh, you can smell it from there, can you? Yes. I've got a lovely apothecary candle called Restore, containing the essential oils geranium, cedarwood, eucalyptus, and lavender. Wow. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, sounds
good. So I just like the candles on my desk when I'm working, just to keep a calm atmosphere going, you know.
Concentrate, that's right. And if you've got.
Yeah, it's nice that you can smell it all the way from.
You know, I have magic powers, don't worry about that. that's quite amazing. So if you've got eucalyptus, do you know what else you should have in the room?
Koala bear?
Yes, exactly. And they're not called koala bears, by the way. They're called koalas. We just call them bears because they look like teddy bears. But, koalas, of course, spend 16 hours a day feeding on eucalyptus and the other 8 hours sleeping, don't they?
I guess they do, yeah. I had a... Oh, do you remember when they used to make them out of actual fur? Isn't that a disgusting thing to us now? Oh. But when my dad went down to Australia, he brought us back little koalas, you know, toys to have. Yeah. And they were made of actual koala fur, which I think we would find horrifying nowadays. But my one was called Michael.
Oh, really?
Guess why?
I don't know. Perhaps you knew that once at some stage in your life you'd meet one of the great professional journalists called Michael, like me, for instance.
No, because it was my koala bear.
Oh, my koala bear, I see. Yeah, how odd. What a strange
I've always been strange.
Strange pattern of thinking for a child. Anyway, look, there you go. Listen, unfortunately, we've got to kick off today's podcast talking about a very good colleague of yours and a very famous Fleet Street showbiz writer who sadly has passed away.
So sad, Herbert Kretzner.
Herbert Kretzner, what was he?
He was TV critic on the Daily Mail when I worked there. We sat next to each other for years.
Right.
And he also had a bit of a songwriting track record. Mm-hmm. He'd written Goodness Gracious Me for Peter Sellers and Sophia Loren and a few others. Or he'd written the English lyrics for songs by Charles Aznavour, the French singer.
Charles Aznavour?
Famously, he wrote the English lyrics of She.
She, that's the only word I know to that song. She, the opening word. That's it.
Yeah, he wrote that.
And he wrote the lyrics to that song.
Yeah, he did. We knew that he was squirreling away at home on something, but he never would discuss it.
Right.
But he'd been working on this project for years and years. And then, of course, it turned out that he was the writer of the English lyrics of Les Miserables, which went on, of course, to be the greatest, longest running musical of all time.
Yeah.
And Herbie became, in his later life, I think he was well into his 60s when success happened for him.
Yeah.
So there's hope for us all.
Yeah.
And he went on to become, you know, a globally fated star and a multimillionaire for his achievements. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And that Peter Sellers one, these days it would be labelled as racist, wouldn't it?
Because absolutely,
Peter Sellers sang it in like a sort of broken Indian accent, didn't he? Oh, goodness gracious me, didn't he? And as kids, we used to laugh at it, didn't we? Him and Peter Sellers and who was the other guy, very funny fella. He's mad, eccentric.
Harry Secombe?
Well, Harry Secombe was the one, the goons. There was Harry Secombe, Peter Sellers, and the other guy had a strange name, didn't he?
It's a bit before my time, the goons. Yeah, I don't really remember.
I can't remember. It was many years ago, but anyway, Spike Milligan, that's the guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, there we are. Oh, dear, well, that's very sad.
Very, very sad. He was 93, I think, 93.
Yep. Do you remember a few great Fleet Street lunches with him and celebrities, that sort of thing?
We used to go to Joe Allen all the time, and I posted a picture yesterday of us with Jack Tinker, who was the theatre critic. And I was very fortunate to be at the Daily Mail at the time I was, because I was trained by these greats. You know, it was Jack who taught me how to file copy, for example.
Right.
So I had to go with him every single night. He had a column called Jack Tinker's Last Night's First Night.
Yes.
Which was a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah.
So he would review all the opening shows on the first night.
Yeah.
But the interesting bit was he had to leave at the interval to go to the phone in the foyer to get on to copy and file his review, you see. So he didn't. He only ever saw the first half, and then we'd go off for dinner.
Yeah.
But he never had a note. He never wrote anything down. It was all off the top of his head.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I was standing there listening to him going, point new part and open quotes and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's how I learned to file copy, was at the knee, literally at the knee of Jack Tinker.
Golly, amazing. And as you quite rightly say, he had to do that because it was needed for the third edition, which usually meant it was kind of London Metropolitan, because the play was taking place in London. So it all made sense, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But they were gorgeous to me. We were the sort of three must get beers for a while.
Yeah.
So Herbie, Jack and I very often used to go for 4 or 5 hour lunches at Joe Allen, the old Joe Allen as it was. You know, it was such a great place. And it was a very Fleet Street kind of central place.
No, it was great. I've had many, many long lunches in there, and it was ab fab, really good. Right, okay. Talking about stars, by the way, I saw a piece this week with... Amy Winehouse's dad, Mitch. We've spoken about him before, but he seems to be sort of jumping on the bandwagon a bit again, you know. Every now and then he sort of pops up talking about Amy, about something. This time it's, "I dream of Amy doing the ironing." Mitch Winehouse has revealed he believes his late daughter Amy visits him in his dreams. The singer, who passed away in 2011, was incredibly close to her dad, and it's this bond which Mitch said believes still binds them together. And then he goes on about, Mitch was speaking ahead of a special release of some of Amy's best works. Does that sound like opportunism to you?
No, not necessarily. I think when he was recording his own work and putting out albums of his own, that to me smacked of opportunism.
Right,
because, you know, nobody would have given him the time of day had he not been Amy Winehouse's dad.
No.
And that all started because he was a cab driver.
Yes.
And he'd started doing a little TV show with some friends of mine, Transparent Television.
Right.
And it was called Mitch Winehouse's Rants.
Yes.
And you know how some cab drivers are. They sit in the cab, they drive you around, and they rant about stuff.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah.
And so then they started putting celebrities in the back of the cab and driving them around, sort of fake journeys.
Yes.
So that he could have a conversation with these people and sort of interview them.
Yeah.
It was when he started recording music that I kind of went off him a bit, because I did feel that Amy actually needed a lot of help. She didn't need exploiting.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree. And you know, just by putting himself in the spotlight, he's giving her further pressure and further problems, isn't he? Because then people think she might be responsible for some of his actions and all that kind of stuff, you know? I totally agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. The best sort of parents that any celebrity can have are those who are completely out of the limelight.
Yes, unless they happen to be celebrities in the first place, and then that's not their fault.
Yeah, well,
really?
That's absolutely true, yeah. Now then, Miss Jones, I'm rather upset. I've seen a survey of the best 40 radio broadcasters of all time, and I do not appear in the list. This is an absolute disgrace. Sir Terry Wogan is at the top, then John Peel, then Tony Blackburn, then my colleague from the organisation I work for, Chris Evans, then a good friend of yours, Kenny Everett, and then it falls down. The problem is nobody from the commercial world is listed in these. They're all from the BBC or have been at the BBC, like Chris Evans. And I often think, you know, when I see reviewers doing reviews of radio programmes like Gillian Reynolds in The Times, they seem to stick entirely to BBC programmes.
So who compiled this list?
Let me see. His warm Irish brogue and sly but gentle humour entertained millions of fans for more than 5 decades. That's me.
Yeah, but he wasn't from Belfast.
No, he wasn't. That's true.
He was a Southern Irishman, wasn't he?
His warm Irish brogue and sly but gentle humour entertained... Anyway.
He wasn't Ian Paisley.
No, he wasn't Ian Paisley. Absolutely right, yeah. Right. His warm Irish brogue. And slightly gentle. No.
That's even worse. Even worse. Okay. Right. I should drop the accent. We'll just keep going. Really...
Now, 4 years after he died, the late Sir Terry Wogan has been hailed as Britain's greatest radio broadcaster of all time. The BBC star took the title with 25% of a public poll. Public poll ahead of the late John Peel with 21% and Tony Blackburn on 18. So it's a public poll organised by, I don't know, but anyway, it looks to me like it's organised by the BBC, because they're all BBC people. But I think of all the DJs, I think I'd have put Tony Blackburn there, to be honest. I think Tony Blackburn's the one I most remember from my youth, because, of course, Tony Blackburn's even older than me.
I love Tony Blackburn. It's very interesting because his wife, Debbie, absolutely hates his voice on air.
Really?
He said to me, she can't stand it. He puts it on, he lays it on thick because that's what broadcasters do. I mean, you don't sound anything like you do in real life as you do on air, Mike, do you?
I don't know. I've never listened to myself on air because I'm usually in the studio and can't hear myself. But I would have thought it was just completely the same, wouldn't it?
No, I'm kidding. You are quite natural. But my favourite was always Roger Scott, who they called the DJ's DJ. Oh, he had an absolutely delicious voice. Yes. It was so seductive. Yes. And he was so knowledgeable about music. And he would pour all this kind of information behind the song and behind the singer into his chats between the records and so on. Yeah. And he was just so believable, so plausible and so easy to listen to.
Yeah, well, it's you pay your money and you take your choice in that sort of thing, isn't it? Absolutely. Yeah. Now then, Miss Jones, what colour is your hair at the moment and what colour has it been? And have you had problems doing your hair whilst in lockdown? Because apparently it's been a real national problem for millions of women not being able to get their hair done, in particular not to get it coloured the way they like it. Now, what's your position?
Well, I'm back at my regular hairdresser, which is John Frieda in London. I've been going there for about 19 years.
Really? Yeah.
And I have generally sort of soft highlights put through my hair, but it's my natural colour is a sort of mid-brown, as you know.
Yes.
During the lockdown, I was kind of touching it up myself from a packet, you know, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
There's no substitute for a proper hairdresser, I don't think.
I'm not big into hairdressing, really. I go and get my hair cut. But when I started doing a bit of sports television about 10 years ago, I thought, ooh, you know, I better get groovy. And so I went and did get my hair done with all those bits of silver they put in your head. You know, I don't know why they do that.
Oh, you had highlights, really?
Well, I changed the colour of it. It was starting to go silver, so I had it changed back to auburn. Because my hair was absolutely red ginger when I was a kid. I was a carrot top. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, you don't look like a ginger.
Well, you've only got to look at my arms to see how many freckles there are on it. You never lose your freckles, and my hair was so bright red. I'm not joking, like bright orange. That my mum always tells me that women would stop her in the street and marvel at my very very orange hair. I was a bit of a freak, I think.
How unusual. You have blue eyes there, yeah?
No, I don't think so. I think they're brown. I think they're brown. So, you know, I'm not the sort of, you know, blue-eyed sort of Paul Newman type look at all. But anyway, I went and started getting my hair done, auburn and all that. But then, yeah, I gave it up. It was ridiculous. Because when it starts growing out, you look so silly. If you've got, you know, if your roots are silver and the rest of your hair's auburn, it looks mad. And now I quite revel in being what I would call a silver fox, you know what I mean?
It's very distinguished kind of look.
Distinguished silver fox look. I do a bit of telly these days and I get a lot of compliments for the silver fox look. And in fact, over the next week, I'm getting my teeth whitened. I think I've told you this before.
Oh, we talked about this. I'm very worried about this.
No, it's fine. I'm doing it through my own dentist. I'm not going to a clinic. You know, a mate of mine once went to a clinic in Oxford Street, had it done in half an hour, cost him £250, and then his teeth started falling out, you know. Not a good thing to do. But I've been – my dentist is a doctor, if you see what I mean. So he's not just a dentist. He's a doctor of – would that be – orthodontics. Yeah, Dr.
Hall. Well, orthodontics tends to be to do with braces and realignment of teeth, straightening them, that kind of thing.
Right, well, he's all that as well as a dentist, because most of my teeth now are not my teeth. Over the years, I've had probably five implanted teeth, right, in which they put a screw in and then they screw the teeth on.
Oh, God, horrible.
And I've had about seven crowns. And, you know, the rest have all been sort of fixed up. So I haven't really got any of my own teeth left. I don't get fillings anymore, for instance, because there's no sort of real teeth left in my head. But
so what were you munching when you were a kid then that you lost all your teeth?
Well, all children lose their milk teeth, don't they? And then over the years, you know, I don't know. Dentistry wasn't very good when I was a kid. You know, I remember for about 20 years, I had three missing teeth in my head. And I've had two of them replaced in the last sort of 10 years, I suppose. But the other gap is just there's not enough bone in the gum to what I've been. But anyway, look, people aren't interested in my teeth.
Oh, nasty. It's those. You must be made of money because those implants are about $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, aren't they?
They're about $6,000 each.
Good God.
Yeah, but another mate of mine, he went the whole hog. He had the whole of his top set replaced with a plate of all new teeth, and that cost him £15,000, right? And it's brilliant because they're indestructible. Whenever he wants his teeth done now, he can just take the plate out and send it to his dentist, and they brush it up and clean it and then send it back in the same day.
But they're very uncomfortable things to wear. My dad had one.
Oh, really?
They really, you can't really eat properly
really?
Once you've got one of those. Well, Dad couldn't anyway.
Oh, golly, yeah. Yeah, I think my father had a plate in the top of his mouth for his front two teeth. But that was it was a very basic thing, and it was many years ago, you know. So I don't know. Now, Ms. Jones, are people aware of the fact that you are a very Puritan, law-abiding, and in particular, church-going lady? And you must have been a bit disappointed to have read over the last few days that church attendances have hit an all-time low, particularly with COVID, of course, people not going out. But even then, even before that, it was dwindling. I've got a great headline here, which will appeal to us. Four funerals and a wedding. Yearly total of services for average parish church as worshippers fall to record low. For centuries, they were focal points for towns and villages, bringing together entire communities under one roof. But last year, parish churches held only four funerals and one wedding each. On average, shocking figures show. Now, you, of course, are a worshipper at a very famous church, aren't you?
Yes, it's St. Bride's Church on Fleet Street, yep. Which is the journalist church,
right.
The spiritual home of the media.
Yes.
And I have to say, our congregation is back, even though we are spaced out.
Really?
There are a lot of us back there already, and we're using the side aisles, you know, that the lovely carved sort of seating around both sides of the main nave.
Yes.
And there are lots of us every Sunday. Yeah. So yeah, we've made a comeback. But I do feel very sad for some of these more far-flung parish churches who are not attracting their congregations anymore.
No, I totally agree. I used to go to Sunday school as a kid, you know, and I used to like, you know, the whole process of that and all that kind of stuff. But I've only been to church half a dozen times, I think, in the last 20 years. But I do quite still enjoy it. And I felt I should because I believe in the principle of Christianity. I like to live my life by Christian rules. And I think, well, if you're taking from Christianity, you have to give a bit back. So I went occasionally when I had time. I simply don't have time anymore. You know, I'm working most Sundays now anyway. But I think if you live a Christian life, you can be forgiven as long as you have Christian principles. But there's another report here. It says, going to church, it's just like taking drugs. This is written by a science correspondent. It says, in 1843, Karl Marx referred to religion as the opium of the masses. A study suggests he was nearer the truth than he might have realised. Researchers have found that the feeling of social connection brought about by taking part in a religious ritual can be lessened by medicine that is usually used to stop opiate addicts getting high. So people actually get high on religion. You know, we've been aware of religious fanatics for years, but it seems it's true.
Well, I think it can't be a bad thing, can it? If you're getting some sort of uplifting experience from social connection with other people, and it's the kind of addiction that doesn't harm anybody.
Yeah. No, well, as long as it doesn't harm anybody, as long as they're not that fanatic that they go around starting wars and things, because I'm afraid wars have been started in the name of of religion over the centuries.
Yeah, I think, they generally use religion as an excuse to start the war.
Well,
though,
you could well be right. Now, talking about religion, that takes us very nicely to somebody we need to discuss now, and that is Cliff Richard, who's 80 years of age. And what a remarkable man he is he not?
He's incredible. I mean, he's got a new single out. I heard it on the radio at the weekend.
Really?
Steve Wright played it,
yeah.
Called Rise Up. For my taste, it's a little bit weak.
Right.
But come on, I'm not going to criticise the great octogenarian Cliff Richard.
No.
He was our Elvis, wasn't he? A heartthrob to rival all of the
yes.
One Directions put together, really.
Yes, he
and
was.
Some people might not realise, but he still outsells younger acts in calendar sales every Christmas.
Really?
And he's still the Peter Pan of pop.
Oh, he's still the Peter Pan of pop, yeah.
He's still the fifth biggest selling artist of all time in the UK.
Good God, that's amazing.
He's sold about 250 million records around the world.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks he never made it in America, but in fact, he had 9 top 40 hits there. The biggest was Devil Woman in 1976.
She's just a devil woman.
And of course, his Christmas songs. You know, we always get his Christmas singles out every year, don't we?
What is it?
Mistletoe and Wine. Do you remember that?
Children singing rhyme. Yeah.
Christmas. Yeah, and he made 10 films, including, of course, the famous Summer Holiday, which is on telly regularly, isn't it?
Well, you know, that's the reason I first remember Cliff Richard. So he's so old that he's much older than me even. And I remember Mum taking us, I've got two sisters, so we're all very little, and Mum took us to see Summer Holiday. And that's the first time I ever knew who Cliff Richard was, you know. And they got in this bus and they went off, you know, we're all going on a summer holiday. And I remember the lyrics meant so much to me. This bus was driving around Greece or something like that, and the blue skies and all that, you know. We're all going on a summer holiday for a week or two, summer holiday, and that kind of stuff. And I thought, God, that's paradise. You know, when I grow up, I'm going to buy a red bus and I'm going to drive onto the beaches of Greece and all this kind of stuff. I genuinely had that ambition for years because of Summer Holiday.
There's a funny story about that song, actually.
Yeah, go on.
It was written by two friends of mine, Brian Bennett, the Shadows drummer, and Bruce Welch, the guitarist.
Right.
And this story did the rounds for years that Brian Bennett was at Heathrow Airport once and they'd gone airside waiting to board the aircraft. Mm. There was a bunch of novice nuns sitting on the floor with a sort of Mother Superior hovering over them. And they were singing Summer Holiday.
Yeah.
So Brian was delighted. He wandered over and he said, oh, hi, you know, how lovely to hear that. I just wanted to say I wrote that song.
Ooh.
At which point the Mother Superior looked at him and went, go away, you paedophile.
Really? You thought he was trying it on with a load of nuns?
Well, Ed Bicknell, who was the manager of Dire Straits for 26 years, he's been putting that story around for donkey's years. And recently it came up over lunch.
Yeah.
And I said to Brian, what about that story? And he goes, it's not true. It's a complete exaggeration.
Really?
And he said, and I've never lived it down.
Yeah.
But it's a good story, right? So, you know, why let the facts get in the way?
Well, absolutely. The other great story in the pop world, of course, is John Lennon saying Ringo Starr wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles. Complete fabrication. Mm. That was Jack McCarrot, wasn't it? In a cabaret show, which hardly anybody attended, but it just got mileage.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining myself and Miss Jones today. Plenty to talk to you about, including your old friend Brian May, Leslie Ann, who, you know, he's a very, very active chap, isn't he? And now he's getting involved in trying to save hedgehogs. And who could deny that saving hedgehogs is not a very worthy thing to do? The headline says, hedgehogs will pay the price for Sainsbury's profits, warns Brian May. And what he's warning about is that Sainsbury's want to expand a huge lorry park they have where the lorries go and pick up provisions for people who buy online and all this kind of stuff. And if they expand this lorry park, it will wipe out a hedgehog habitat.
It's very interesting about hedgehogs, and I completely agree with Brian that it's important
yep.
to preserve this species because they are seen as an indicator species for the health of the natural world. They feed on soil invertebrates such as worms and so on. Yeah. There's been a big decline in their population. And when that happens, it implies that the quality of the environment has significantly decreased.
Right.
So what is certain is that nature can live without humans, but humans can't live without nature.
Oh, no.
And I think what he's really saying is the increase in roads and traffic is one of the common causes of death for the hedgehog.
Yes.
And roads, it's interesting, roads also isolate hedgehog populations and prevent them from moving around freely.
Yeah.
So we so often see them squashed on the road, don't we?
Oh, it's horrible.
Because they're trying to get to the other side to be with their families and so on.
Yeah,
it's very, very sad.
It's very sad indeed. And if you live in a street where everybody's got a back garden, and down here in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, people have huge gardens, honestly. These houses were built when it was countryside, you know what I mean? And they just like took a field and made it your garden and all that. And the idea is that all these suburban houses, you know, they're quite well spaced apart from each other, but usually divided by fences. And, you know, the plea goes out often, please cut a hole in your fence, right, so that the hedgehogs can get through from one garden to the other. Because you quite rightly say at some stage they might have been separated and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, look, I've got some figures here. The UK hedgehog population has fallen from 1.5 million in 1995 to 500,000 in 2018, according to the Mammal Society, which placed hedgehogs on a new red list of British species at risk of extinction. My God, we don't want to see the hedgehog go, do we?
Well, we don't. And it's all about the food chain, isn't it?
Is it? Yeah.
You know, if you start at grass, literally at grassroots level, slugs, insects eat grass, thrushes, frogs, voles eat insects.
Yeah.
If our insect population goes down, then that has an impact on the foods that we eat, of course, because the number of seeds goes down for the new crop plants to grow and all that kind of thing.
No.
So the food chain is really important. Mm. And the other thing to point out here, of course, is that people who feed foxes domestic food are affecting the food chain. They really shouldn't do that because foxes then get lazy about chasing other wildlife, which is the normal stuff that they eat, and the whole food chain collapses.
Yeah, no, I think it's mad to feed foxes because I totally agree. I sometimes see a bedraggled fox and I think the poor little thing and all that kind of stuff. But you're right, it's the biggest problem we're going to have soon, by the way, not wishing to worry anybody, but is rats, because the problem is that so many late-night fast food places are now closed that the leftovers are not being thrown out anymore, you know what I mean? And it's not being spilt onto the pavement and it's not, you know, trailed along roads and all that kind of stuff. And rats, believe it or not, are going to move into the suburbs because their bins overflow there that they don't in town centres. And I was reading a report on it the other day. It's going to be a serious problem. It's said you're never more than 6 feet away from a rat in this country, isn't it?
Well, it gets closer every time you hear that expression.
Oh, no,
you know, it used to be you're never more than 12 feet away from that, and then it sort of reduced and reduced. But I have very often stood on underground platforms waiting for a train and seen rats scurrying along the rails.
Yes.
You know, down in the underground.
Yeah, so, I know.
Yeah, I think London is already quite overrun with rats, to be honest.
Oh, every city in the world is. It's just that we don't see them often. I mean, New York is dreadful. New York's got all sorts of things, cockroaches in particular. People buy million-pound apartments and then have to have them fumigated, you know, on a regular basis because they're full of cockroaches, you know. It's disgusting. But if you think about plonking that many people on a piece of rock 12 miles long and 2 miles wide, you're going to have problems, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, always.
Yeah, totally.
I think New York is really quite smelly in the summer, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I agree.
The drains, the sewers. Yeah. I mean, you could never actually rebuild the sewers of New York, could you? Because you'd have to take all the buildings down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. As soon as you start digging in New York, something's going to fall down, isn't it? So you're absolutely right. But anyway, talking about great cities of the world, Paris is one, and you lived there, of course. And I thought it was only in London that we read these mad stories about, you know, cupboards literally being sold as apartments because demand for property in places like Kensington is so so enormous. But listen to this one. For sale, tiny room at top of apartment block, no direct lift, one mod con, small skylight with view of Notre Dame, offers over 121,000, size 8 feet by 8 feet. And that's in Paris. I mean, that's amazing.
That is ridiculous. There's one just down the road from us, actually, just about five doors down from my house. Mm. There's a big double-fronted house, and it had a tiny little, what looked like a garage to me.
Yeah.
And it was being redeveloped. And then it went on the market for £900,000. And this, I swear, it's no wider than a car.
What, the garage itself was 900,000?
Yeah, they developed it into a little house, like a sort of Wendy house on the side of the main house.
Yes.
And it was on the market. It was in the Standard for 900 grand.
Good God, that's amazing. I've seen that sort of thing happen in Kensington. You know, a gap between two houses is suddenly filled in, and it's no more than 6 feet wide, but it goes up four stories, and people somehow manage to put a shower in and all that kind of stuff. Absolute madness. I'd rather live in the suburbs with a bit of room around me. Talking about France, by the way, the French are getting all funny again about the language and starting to ban English expressions. So, for instance, in recent weeks, France Info, the state radio station, has mentioned le top model, Naomi Campbell, un pop-up store, Hugo Boss, and le streetwear of the trainers brand presented by. But now the government are saying, cut it out and go back to French.
Well, it's crazy because over the centuries, the English language has assimilated so many words and phrases from a variety of other languages.
That's right.
So many that mostly we don't realise we're saying foreign things when we say things like a cappella for a song without an instrumental accompaniment.
Yes.
Or we say à deux, a table à deux for two people, ad hoc from the Latin, ad nauseum, al dente, al fresco, Blitzkrieg from the German. And what about these from the French? Joie de vivre, or je ne sais quoi, haute couture,
I agree.
Enfant terrible, en masse, faux pas, gite, all these words.
Yeah.
So I don't see why languages can't cross over and continue to use words from other languages when we don't have an exact word for that ourselves.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Also, I've discovered over the years that a lot of our words, believe it or not, are of Indian origin from the time when, of course, the British Empire was, the jewel of the British Empire was India. And I can't actually remember a word now that's Indian, but there are loads of Indian words in our vocabulary.
Well, words like Jodhpurs.
Jodhpurs, there you go.
Which is a city in India,
yeah,
isn't it?
But, it yeah.
And also from the ancient Greek.
Yes.
So, for example, Narcissist, Nectar, Nemesis, Odyssey, Oedipus, Olympian, all of those kind of words are all from the ancient Greek.
No, Miss Jones, indeed.
I have an amazing book, which is long out of print.
Right.
It's called Le Mot Juste, a French title,
yeah.
Le Mot Juste,
yeah.
The exact word. It's a dictionary of foreign and classical words and phrases. And I have used this book to death.
Yeah.
It's one of those that lives on my desk and I constantly refer to it. I paid £2.95 for it back in 1976.
Yeah.
And I've not seen it ever again, but it's a fantastic little work of reference.
Oh, that's brilliant. I have a book which I keep on the table next to the chair I sit in, next to my light, and it's called Revolution in the Head. Have you ever heard of it?
So that's a Beatles reference.
Revolution in the Head is a...
That's Ian, what's his name's book? An explanation of all the songs,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. Ian, here, I'm looking at it from where I'm. Ian MacDonald, okay?
Yes.
And it is literally a detailed analysis and explanation of every Beatles song. And I still haven't got through every song, you know what I mean, to work out...
Yeah, it's a great, great work of reference.
It's a great work of reference, and one of my favourite songs, the Lennon song, is Across the Universe. He rates that as the worst Beatles record of all time. And I think it's wonderful and beautiful.
I think just because John dashed it off, it's almost like a sort of jingle for an advert, isn't it, really? It wasn't his best thought through lyric by any means.
Yeah.
But Ian MacDonald had a sad ending. He committed suicide.
Did he? Why? What happened to him?
Oh, didn't ask him.
Oh,
don't know.
No, I mean, why, did his career collapse or something, or do we know?
I know nothing about it other than that he killed himself.
That's interesting because the other day I was reading once again, I've read it a few times over the years, the two members of the group that were said to become the new Beatles that were on the Apple label, two of them hanged themselves 10 years apart. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Badfinger.
Oh, God, yeah.
Badfinger. They wrote the song, If You Want It, Here It Is.
Come and Get It.
Come and Get It, yeah. It was either that one or one of the others. Paul McCartney wrote one of them and they wrote the other one. And whichever, you only had two hits. And whichever one it was, they, you know, the tragedy just spilled out. It's a world of rock and roll, I'm afraid. Talking about that, just very briefly, because, you know, we've had an awful lot about John Lennon recently because of your book and his 80th birthday. But I see Sean Lennon, who, amazingly, we never mentioned this, did we? He has his birthday on the same day as his father. What a
yes.
remarkable coincidence. There's 365 days a year he could have been born. He's born on the same day as his father's birthday.
They could have nudged that slightly. I'm not sure whether Yoko had a cesarean section, but they could have chosen the date.
Could have done, I suppose. But he's thinking of applying to Buckingham Palace to get the John's MBE back.
Well, good luck with that. I don't suppose they'll consider that for a moment.
Well, the story I read, and, you know, it was in one of the papers, was that it was offered back to them 10 years ago and they turned it down. But now that he's an adult and he's grown up and he wants, you know, to preserve as much of his father's memory as he can, because he was only five when John Lennon died, he's going to go back to them, ask them if he can have it, which I think would be rather nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be, but if, I mean, 10 years ago, Sean was 30. So, you know, he was an adult then. He turned it down as an adult.
I don't think he did. I think it was Yoko Ono turned it down. I don't think he, I don't think he knew a lot about
it. It's a bit of a snub to Her Majesty, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
to return the thing in the first place was rather rude.
Yeah, here, I've got it here. Look, just found it. Half a century after John Lennon returned his MBE, son Sean, 45, would like it back. Noting that his mum, Yoko Ono, declined a Buckingham Palace offer of its return, he adds, I would have been like, sure, thank you. I'm so sorry we were a bit rude, but you know how my dad was. So maybe, well, I don't know, but it'd be quite something, wouldn't it?
It'd be worth a lot of money if they get it back.
I was about to say to you, would that be the most valuable MBE medal in the history of medals, you know?
Can you imagine? Yeah. I mean, that guitar that my friend Ray Russell, just not Ray Russell, Ray Russell,
yeah.
One Ray,
yeah.
Put into Bonham's for an auction, just... that's up for 300,000. That was a guitar that George Harrison had given him.
Yeah, God, utterly amazing. Now, Ms. Jones, because, of course, you're queen of the showbiz world, what did you make of seeing the London Palladium full of people this week? Did you see the footage?
Well, that was for Arsene Wenger's book launch.
Well, he was, but then also there were two other events that took place at London Palladium, because I think Lord Webber's behind all this. I think he's decided to get something moving.
Yeah, the Royal Ballet had a performance there as well. I think that this is worrying. People think, why can the London Palladium fill itself with audiences, but people can't go and watch a football match in the stadium? What they're saying is that it's to do with the increased risk of transmission caused by thousands of fans travelling to football matches on public transport in a single weekend. Mm. Whereas people who go to the London Palladium, presumably, are going by other means. They're not all cramming onto public transport. I think that is where the risk comes in.
Yeah, no, you may well be right, but, you know, you've got to be able to solve this football problem. It's in the open air. The virus comes out of your mouth and goes straight up because it's lighter than the air. It just dissipates.
Well, no, it doesn't. The droplets fall to the ground.
Well,
but that isn't the problem, as I've just said. Yeah. It's to do with people using public transport en masse.
Sure.
To use a French phrase, en masse.
Yes, en masse,
So it's not what's going on in the stadia or at the football grounds. It's what's going on public transport.
Well,
that's the issue.
I think we should be trying harder to resolve that situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Going through a crisis at the moment anyway, because the accusation is that Manchester United and Liverpool are trying to literally seize power of the game, you know, and start a new European Super League and all that, which, according to the latest reports, has now been put on hold and scrapped. But, you know, football is such an amazing money generator. As somebody pointed out, Netflix owns all the films it puts out, and Netflix is worth $250 billion, right? Football is a unique product. And if somebody owned the output of all that, and, you know, in many ways, people like Rupert Murdoch have owned large chunks of it worldwide, that the wealth that you could generate is incalculable.
Yes, I agree.
You know,
that something does need to be done, because we're never going back to normal. I think normal of the old days is gone.
Yeah.
And what we have to concentrate on now is fixing new ways of doing things so that a semblance of normal life can continue.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now then, Miss Jones, you must have looked on in horror when you saw the antics of Dominic West, the actor, and a actress much, much younger than him. I think 20 years younger. I think Dominic West is 51 and the actress Lily somebody is 31 or something. Only for 2 days later to be posing by the gatepost with his wife. This all took place somewhere overseas, and he's back with the wife and she's smiling as well. What do you make of all that?
Well, I smell a rat. Talking of rats, I think this is all a publicity stunt.
Really?
Because if you have a look at those pictures of Dominic West and Lily James canoodling in Rome over the weekend.
Eternal city.
You know, the pictures don't quite tell the story. They're not actually snogging. He could be whispering something into her ear.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, then he comes back to his wife, Catherine, and they hold up a piece of paper for the press to have a look at, saying that our marriage is as strong as ever. And his wife looks very happy indeed. So I think this is all a publicity stunt. They're pulling the wool here.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure I like that Dominic West very much. I mean, everybody's got an opinion about the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump. But anybody who's, you know, a sort of lovey from the music world who has to, by definition, be sort of left of centre politically. But anybody who says, oh, you know, I jumped a little high when I heard that the president had got COVID-19. That's not a good way to lead your life, wishing illness and disease and possible death on other people, is it?
No, absolutely not. Whoever you're talking about, we don't wish them dead, right? Yeah. But this guy's an actor, isn't he? He's not a musician.
Yeah.
The one I feel sorry for in the whole mix is Lily James, because she's a lovely actress.
Is she from Downton?
She was in Downton Abbey as Lady Rose, she obviously played the lead role in the Mamma Mia sequel.
Oh, right, okay, right.
And, of course, she dated Doctor Who, Matt Smith, for about 5 years.
Yeah.
But she's the one that's going through all this being ripped to shreds as the home-wrecking man-eater all over social media. People are being so abusive of her. And photos can be deceptive.
Yes, I agree. He should know better, though, too. I mean, even if he has agreed, you know, to be involved in what you believe is a publicity stunt, that's bad taste as well, isn't it?
Of course it is. They've got four kids.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so those children have to go to school every day and put up with all the ribbing. Oh, your dad's in Rome shagging some pretty actress and your mum's crying away at home and stuff. You know how cruel kids can be.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So I feel sorry for everyone here, but not for him, because I think he's 50. He should know better.
He should know better, yeah. You talked about Les Miserables earlier, and your colleague, was it Herbert Kretzmer, wrote the lyrics. I saw the TV version of Les Miserables, didn't I, which didn't have any music in it, but was a fantastic series on the BBC. And Dominic West was the lead actor, and he was brilliant.
Oh, he plays Jean Valjean.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the guy who did 19 years on the boats for stealing a loaf of bread.
Yeah. Yeah. 24601. Yes, very powerful.
24601, was that his number?
Yes, that was his prisoner number. There's a song actually that focuses on that. My Henry played Jean Valjean in South London Youth Theatre's production of Les Mis, and he was astonishingly good.
Yeah.
But I would say that.
Of course you would. Yeah, but I'm sure that it's from a very independent point of view. what about, I mean, Michael Jackson's been on a long time, but the Jacksons, I don't know if they're still around or not, but I saw that Tito Jackson has just celebrated his 67th birthday. I mean, what became of the Jacksons once Michael had shuffled off this mortal coil?
Well, they did still try and go out as the Jacksons, didn't they?
I don't know.
I was quite friendly for some years with two of Michael's siblings.
Oh, yes.
Jermaine Jackson, who had quite a credible solo career,
right.
And also LaToya, who tried very hard to have a credible solo career.
Yes.
The problem with LaToya was that she was entangled with this terrible person who she married in the end. He brainwashed her, Jack Gordon, who was her manager.
Oh, yeah.
And he was mafia connected and tried to sort of sell her to Playboy doing centerfolds and all that kind of thing and sort of dragged her right down.
Yeah.
But I always maintain that I'm one of the few journalists in the world, if not the only one, who can prove to you that LaToya Jackson and Michael Jackson were not the same person, which was often said because I had dinner with them both at the same time.
You told me that, yeah. They were both in the same room at the same time, so they couldn't have been the same person.
No, but that rumor did the rounds for years, didn't it?
Oh, God, yeah, it did. And they looked so incredibly alike anyway. So
they had the same nose surgery.
That's right, yeah. Their nose was pinched, wasn't it, for want of a better word. Yeah. And that's it. Now, talking about celebs here, and we talked recently about weight loss and, self-confidence and all that. Kelly Osbourne has now done an Adele. Have you seen this?
Yeah, she's lost 85 pounds.
Gosh.
And she looks ridiculous. She had
I thought she looked fabulous.
Well, no, I think she looks too thin. She had a gastric sleeve surgery, which is a horrible thing. It changes the shape and the size of your stomach. Golly. Can you imagine something so vile? Yeah. And she also became vegan, which I approve of.
You're not vegan.
Sorry?
You're not vegan.
I have my dates.
No. Miss Jones, please. I have seen you feast on Chinese food containing beef, duck, all sorts of things. No.
Well, you won't have seen me eat beef. I never eat red meat. You have seen me eat duck and chicken,
yeah, duck and chicken, there you go, see.
I'm not really a muncher of such meals anymore.
Right.
I don't have dairy at all.
Right.
No red meat whatsoever.
Right.
And I would say that I veer on the vegan side, you know, and I think it's a very healthy way forward.
Yes, well, Paul McCartney's been a vegan now for 60 years, I think.
He looks amazing. You should see him. He's slender and he's fit. His skin is beautifully smooth. He's an absolute advert, a walking advert for vegetarianism and veganism.
Yeah, but you see, then I read other things in my medical journals. I have a huge range of journals that I gather my knowledge from, as you will know, Leslie Ann.
I've seen them.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounded a bit double.
I'll take that back.
Absolutely, yes. And I read reports all the time that, you know, veganism isn't good for the soul, isn't good for the body. Man needs meat, and without it, your body becomes frail.
I don't think we do need meat anymore. I think there are many sources of protein, alternative sources that we can sustain ourselves on without killing creatures. Mm. I think if you had to go out and hunt a calf and then bring it home, kill it, skin it, chop it up and make it into food, I think you might change your mind about eating something
like
that. Well,
I mean, obviously that's where it all started with the caveman and all that. And that was just another part of the food chain, really, wasn't it? That's what you did to survive. If you didn't eat, if you didn't hunt, you didn't get an animal. If you didn't cut the animal up, you didn't get any meat, you didn't get any food. It was self-survival. Talking about food.
It is barbaric, though, isn't it? I mean, and I think most people, if they had to kill their own food, I think most people would think twice about eating something like that.
Well, they don't, you know, it's funny you should say that. But people still go into restaurants and point out, oh, I'll have that fish, please. And the fish is actually taken out of the tank and then killed and prepared, you know, in the kitchen next to them. I can't understand that. I couldn't possibly do that.
I couldn't do that. But I don't think they cooked that one. I think they put it back in the tank and they've got some, here's one I prepared earlier, kind of Blue Peter style. Do you remember that great story about Paul and Linda McCartney going into a restaurant in Los Angeles on the ocean there, down by Santa Monica?
Right.
And they felt sorry for all the lobsters in the tank.
Yeah.
So they bought all the lobsters
and
they drove them down to the ocean and let them free, only for a fisherman to catch them all again the next day.
Oh, no. I would do that, actually. I hate the lobsters. dropping animals into boiling water. No, thank you.
No, it's hideous.
It's hideous, yeah. Just on that, we'll just finish on that, because there seems to be a big debate going on about sushi now, that sushi's always been eaten the wrong way. You should never eat sushi quickly and should never eat it with chopsticks. And this comes from the top sushi chef, Eleni Manususu, who runs Nobu Marbella.
Okay.
Is any of that known to you?
Nobu. It's best not to say Nobu. It's a family show.
A family show, yeah, Nobu, yeah. It says, Eleni Manususu, the first female head chef at the famous Nobu chain, has revealed that diners should pick up sushi with their hands.
Yes, I've seen my Japanese friend Suki eats her sushi with her hands.
Really? I've never eaten sushi. I don't like the look of it. What does it taste like?
Well, it's some of it's vegetarian. Again, yeah. It's got things like avocado in it, but there's a lot of raw fish involved, and I don't like eating raw fish.
Neither do I. I wouldn't eat raw fish.
It's disgusting.
I totally agree. Wouldn't do me at all, honestly. I'm afraid I'm, you know, very much a steak and chips chap. So next time we're out on that Fleet Street crawl, Miss Jones, we'll find you a nice little vegan shop up the alleyway towards the Cheshire Cheese, and I'll go off and find myself a steak. Right.
Who are you taking up the alleyway?
Miss Jones, family show.
Family show.
Absolutely. You know, God, find a double entendre, as we were talking about.
Well, there you go. There's another French one, you see. So these French people ought to just grow up, and let's carry on all sharing our expressions.
Yes, indeed. You could be, well, right. Right, okay, Miss Jones. Well, thank you very much indeed. I take it you've got a busy few days ahead of you again.
I'm off gallivanting for a few days. Good. Yes, I'm heading west.
Great, that's great.
On a little jaunt. I need a break before I settle down and start writing my next book.
Excellent. Well done. That's great. I am going to be on the radio on Saturday and Sunday on Talk Radio. So anybody out there who wants to keep up can catch me there. And I will be on telly next week with my new white teeth. How about that?
Brilliant. I shall be dazzled. I shall look forward to that.
Love, indeed. Right. OK, everybody, thank you very much. You get me at Mike Parry 8. And Leslie Ann, where will they get you?
At LAJ Writer.
LAJ Writer. So, OK, folks, thank you very much. Until the next time, stay safe.
Goodbye for now. So who compiled this list?
Let me see. His warm Irish brogue and sly but gentle humour entertained millions of fans for more than five decades. That's me.
Yeah, but he wasn't from Belfast.
No, he wasn't. That's true.
He was a Southern Irishman, wasn't he?
His warm Irish brogue and sly but gentle humour entertained... Anyway.
He wasn't Ian Paisley.
No, he wasn't Ian Paisley. Absolutely right, yeah. Right. His warm Irish brogue. And slay your children.
No. That's even worse.
Even worse. Okay.
Okay. I should drop the accent.
We'll just keep going. Kelly Osbourne has now done an Adele. Have you seen this?
Yeah, she's lost 85 pounds.
Gosh.
And she looks ridiculous. She had
I thought she looked fabulous.
Well, no, I think she looks too thin. She had a gastric sleeve surgery, which is a horrible thing. It changes the shape and the size of your stomach. Can you imagine something so vile?
Yeah.
And she also became vegan, which I approve of. If
you're
she'd have done
vegan,
it just by...
You're not vegan.
Sorry?
You're not vegan.
I have my dates.
No. Miss Jones, please. I have seen you feast on Chinese food containing beef, duck, all sorts of things. No.
Well, you won't have seen me eat beef. I never eat red meat. You have seen me eat duck and chicken.
Yeah, duck and chicken. There you go. See?
The mother superior looked at him and went, "Go away, you paedophile."
Really? Thought he was trying it on with a load of nuns.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.